Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to Deep Thoughts. Today we're going to talk about something extremely valuable and important, and I'm going to twist it on you, I think a little bit different than maybe you've had in the past, and it's about the law of attraction. You know, lately in the show, I've been kind of ebbing towards a reality where, you know, mathematics, obviously, I think most of us realize, is the mechanism by which the universe operates, keeps itself together, functions, communicates, etc., etc. Sustains our form, right? And then we have something called consciousness, which in some magical way, it doesn't matter if you believe in a creator or in science, evolution, in some amazing way, we have managed to take possession of a certain finite amount of energy, even though it may be connected with all the energy in the universe. And it's our sovereign being, our souls. And that gives us identity. And it must be the most miraculous thing to ever occur, ever. And you know what? It doesn't have to. We don't have to have more than one of us in the universe for that to be amazing. We could all be the same being. It's just the time doesn't really have the perceivable constraints in the real universe as we perceive it in our mortal coils, right? But I think that most of you who have come closer and closer to the truth about the universe have realized that we are a ton of frequencies. Vibrational frequencies of an original fabric. I think for the sake of argument, as you always hear me lament, and if you made a drinking game out of every time I said this word, you'd be an alcoholic, which is ether. But whatever you want to call it. You could call it the John particle. I don't care. But we are a huge collection of frequencies. And frequencies have mathematical principles and properties by which they behave. And it's always the case, the frequencies that are alike have zero resistance to each other and therefore collect with each other. And the second you get something out of phase, you have an ejection constant that starts. And I'll give you a really funny analogy. A lot of you remember Chris Kattan and Will Ferrell doing a skit on Saturday Night Live called The Roxbury Brothers. They actually made a movie on it, which was actually amazingly good. But it's about two guys who go to a discotheque in the 90s, some ravey kind of club, and they, you know, a second someone looks at them, they go, "Oh, you looking at me? You know, him, you, me, you, him, me." And then they would finally get someone to come over and stand between them, and then they would oscillate their bodies until the person between them got ejected out between the two of them. And that's a perfect example of what happens when something that isn't oscillating at the same frequency as something else starts to get pushed and prodded. And they can also get mutual frequencies that augment each other and start to amplify, like a bridge that gets hit by wind and starts to amplify. But the reason why I'm mentioning all this crazy stuff right at the very beginning, because it is the very basis of the law of attraction. Now, when I say, okay, I'm going to create a big cell phone tower and it's going to pump out waves at a particular frequency, and then I have, you're holding your cell phone, and I say, that cell phone has a part in it that's built to receive the exact frequency from the tower. It all looks scientific, and you're like, yes, that's cool. It totally makes sense. I know it works. Thank you, Nikola Tesla, right? However, what if that algorithm goes way, way deeper than a simple cause and effect scientific experiment? What if this whole thing governs the whole thing? And there's no reason why it wouldn't. But today I'm going to teach you how to get to where you want to be in life through the law of attraction. And consequently, inadvertently, get you away from stuff that you don't want to be involved in. When I moved to California, I've mentioned this a couple times, I got my first job in software. I went in and really funny story. I'm sitting in this room and I'm looking at a Macintosh computer. It's 1987, September. And I really hadn't seen one. I mean, I'd seen one at a store right in, I don't know, 85 or whatever in my Midwest town. But, you know, I couldn't sit and do much with it because it was like parents were trying to get out of the computer store. And it's blowing my mind. This thing was faster than anything I'd ever seen. Totally different. It was the first time that like you had a white piece of paper with black writing on it. All the computers up to that point were inverted, and Personally, I like writing on dark surfaces nowadays. It's less stress on your eyes. But anyway, I'm sitting at this computer, my first job. It's those tax people I keep talking about. And this kid comes in behind me. And I'm 18 and he's 17. I guess he graduated early like me because he worked there full-time as well. And he gets behind me. And he literally pulls up a chair behind me and he's eating corn nuts. And if any of you have tasted corn nuts or smelled them, I love corn nuts. Except they're all GMO now, but they crunch really loud and they have this pretty pungent aroma from the seasoning that are on them. And he's just crunching these things in my ear. And I remember thinking, who the hell is this kid? Like, somebody get this kid away from me. I'm just trying to learn my job here. He and I end up being up that night until I don't even know how late, making animated videos in this thing called, I think it was called VideoWorks at the time, which actually ended up being Flash. This is 87, way before all that came around. He and I became best friends. When I got into the video game industry, I eventually recruited him to help with some of the mathematical tables because he was a big role-playing kid. But the reason why I mention this guy, for a very specific reason, is that he is probably one of the most positive-thinking guys I've ever met in my life. And what's weird about it is that no matter what happens in the universe, no matter how you throw this cat into the sky, this kid always lands on his feet. It is unbelievable. And it's not that he always lands everywhere he wants to land, but he never really suffers. And it's fantastic. Nobody wants this guy to suffer. He never has. He's living in Seattle right now, just making gobs of money, making Marvel video games. But he is, when you hang out with this guy, he's one of the guys that I used to role play with who, you know, looked at me and confirmed that, you know, you can't control the dice. Through laws of attraction, through your dictation of reality, once you fully believe in it, you engage it and you control it. But this guy would play paintball, he'd play laser tag, and it just didn't matter what was going on. The guy always nailed you. He is to this day probably one of the best first-person shooter game players on planet Earth, and part of it is sheer skill, but the other thing is that he's the guy that finds two parking spaces in the front of any restaurant during rush hour. He's that guy. And for those of you who like video games, I'll give you a couple examples of how amazing this kid is. Electronic Arts, you can imagine, is a big company. By the time he and I start working there, he worked there full-time. I worked there part-time at first. Probably about 2,500 employees. And he was better than every single employee in the entire company at first-person shooters. He just was one guy that could give him a run for his money, and that was about it. I think within the last 10 years... he got back into Counter-Strike, which is a game finished in like 96, but still people play it to this day, 20 years later. And it's a game kind of like paintball. When you go in, you have a finite amount of, you have one life, and it's like real life. You know, it's like paintball. When you get killed, you have to get out until the game starts over. But this guy will go in with a knife and kill every single person on the other side without anyone on his side at all. And of course, they yell at him, say he's hacking the thing. The guy's never cheated in his life that I know of, ever. He's just that good, you know. But he taught me something about the law of attraction, and that every time I talk to him, he just always has an incredibly positive opinion with no doubt in his mind. And so for me, he reaches into literally the bowels of the universe and utterly and completely controls it. But now let's talk about your life and my life and how the law of attraction can really make things better. Because this is a new thing that I'm doing now with all my friends, because I'm doing it myself, and it appears to be working extremely well, like crazy good. Let's say that you're at point A in your life, and you don't have to be discontent with point A, but let's just say maybe you were, doesn't really matter either way, but you'd rather be in point B. Point B is your destination lifestyle. I'm going to tell you before we really get into this exercise, B could be as utterly amazing as you want to make it within the confines of reality, right? If you're a man and you want to be a woman, you're probably going to have some surgical scars on you. If you want to fly like, you know, Superman, we may not be able to get you there unless you leave this universe and travel to another plane of existence. But as long as there's something possible, I think we got something we can work with, right? But there's something that I realized about where you are and the destination that you want to be. If I drew it on a piece of paper, you know, usually a person would write a little stick figure and they say, this is you. And they put you inside the A circle. the halo of existence that is position A. And then they draw B, and you're not there. And of course, they draw some dotted lines over to B from A, and they're like, hey, all we got to do, guys, is figure out the steps it takes for you to get from point A to point B. And then, and the more lucid you are about those steps, the more, you know, honest you are with yourself about all these different things you have to do, you have a higher chance of getting to B. Now, there's some logic to that, and there's probably some truth to that. But I'm going to suggest something radically different. I'm going to suggest that you take the stick figure that's you, and then if you have on the left side of your screen, you have A, on the right side of your screen, you have B, you put yourself above both of those in dead center. The stick figure is you. You are your own sovereign being. You get to choose whatever circle you want to go into at any point in the week, in the day, and I'm going to suggest no one can stop you. But I just got done working in a contract for a couple of years, and I was around a lot of people that I believe are sort of formalized slaves, working in an environment that absolutely guts their soul, that guts down to their genetics any attempt to make the world better. It was very sad to see people who have been there for 30 years trying to suck a retirement check out of the system. I got friends of mine who work there that are way too young to be thinking like this. And so what I'd like to do is use this example, and let's just say A has a label. The label under the A circle is slave. And the label under the B circle is freedom or free. And you can define free as whatever you want. Maybe you want a ton of cash. Maybe you want a big house and a couple big fancy cars. Maybe you just want to be off from under whatever you're doing right now. I would suggest making sure that your B has a long-term strategy for happiness, because you will most likely achieve it. And if you don't think it through, you might be disappointed. And the way I would describe the process of defining B goes something like this. You guys have undoubtedly seen a TV show or a movie about a genie coming out of a bottle who says, you got three wishes. And what's the fallacy of the three wishes? The fallacy of the three wishes is that as people make the wish, they do not define everything properly. And so what ends up happening is they get what they ask for, which is a very non-specific diminishing return thing. You know, there's a Twilight Zone where a guy asks for a ton of money and then the IRS shows up. You know, he's already given out all the money to his friends to make sure that no one suffers, and now he's on the hook. You know, there's just been tons of these things. There's an X-Files that's actually really, really brilliant from the 90s about a genie out of a bottle. So what I say to you is, and I've done this before, is if you ask someone, you know, what is your dream thing, your dream, you know, maybe your dream mate in life, and I say, okay, everything that you don't define absolutely to the nine, from their intellect to their interest, perhaps to their body types, then it's not going to be the way you like. And exactly those areas, you're just not going to like it. So if you sit down and write, you know, a 100-page essay on your fantasy partner, that's what you're going to get. So be specific about your B in your mind. Your destination, end goal game, you know? But now here's the reason why this episode is being created. And here's the change in my life. It's fairly profound. It just came to me in the last 6 months. I have patted myself on the back for being the guy that can get to B through being very lucid about A. And I think now I've made a big mistake in having that assumption. I no longer believe that. If you're in an environment that you don't like, and I don't care what it is, a marriage, a job, a location on planet Earth, then don't think about it at all. Don't think about it at all. Just ignore it. Now, maybe that you have to interact with human beings, right? So it's not a matter of, discommunicating individuals. But you can move around objects and interact with objects without being so intimately stuck to them. And I give an example. A lot of you keep a nice clean house, or clean enough, you know? And then you go visit a friend's house, and God damn it, if they aren't the most filthy, hoarding person on planet Earth. Now, you can interact with their hoarding and interact with their horrible environment and, you know, you know, pee standing up, even if you're a chick, because the toilet's so gross. And all you do is you go back home to your world. You don't accept your friend's world as your world. You accept the fact that you're in that world at that point in time. At that point in time, your friend's home is the A that you're trying to escape, and you know you will. In fact, you don't have any worries. I'm going back to my house at the end of this game. So you go back to your house, which is B. That's sort of how we have to handle, I think, at this point in my life, your current environment, if it is not what you want. Now, I will concede that there is most likely a good 10% of you who are exactly where you want, and maybe this isn't for you, because you just got it handled. But maybe you just listen for the sake of describing this to somebody else. But now, and there's a lot of motivational courses that actually do exactly what I'm saying, but I'm not sure they quite put it in such specific, even like quantum frequency reality for you. But now, if you could sit and imagine the world you want to be in, and with the internet, it's so nice. You know, you can look up photographs of locations, photographs of possessions, whatever you want, and focus on what it will be like when you get it. When you get there, if it's a destination, when you get the job, when they call you up and say they loved you, when you, go buy your first Lamborghini, and you're driving off the lot, and you can't even believe it. You paid cash for it. You didn't buy it on a lease. And for the next 10 miles, 20 minutes, 20 hours, you are saying, I did it. I did it. I did it. I got my Lamborghini. And obviously, you don't need a nice house to park it in. So as soon as you park it in your six-car garage with your other Lamborghini and your Maserati and maybe a couple of your older cars, you're just like, I can't even believe I did it. You know? I pulled it off. I did something that made me money, helped the world, whatever. Hopefully you're not selling kilos of coke. But now what I need you to do is understand that if you put that little stick figure inside A and do what we've all done, and I'm guilty of this for the majority of my life, which is to say I patted myself on the back and said, the more lucid I am about being in A, you know, the more I'm aware of the bars around me holding me in this jail cell, the more likely I am to get out of the jail cell. And I think that's bullshit. The more that you think that this isn't where you really are and that you should be out of this, you should be at a different location, that you do live in a different location. You know, it's almost like that whole thing of Twilight Zones where, I'll give you an analogy. Like, if you woke up in someone else's body, it's even a game that you asked for. You know, you see, I used to have this game maybe 10, 15 years ago where I'd be driving down the street. I look over on the sidewalk and I see some poor person who's very attractive, male or female. And I'd see them really overweight. I'd see them down and I'd see them waiting at some stoplight, you know, on foot. And maybe they got their fast food clothes on. And you could just tell in their face, this isn't where they wanted to be. And you think, damn, if I could put my life on pause and not lose any seconds of my life, but I go into their life for a year, I could immediately clean up their eating habits. I could immediately, maybe if I could keep my knowledge, go get them a really cool job. But even if I had to reset and you just knew the general tense of what I'm doing, I could get them educated and fix their lives, right? And then just drop them back into an incredibly amazing life in 1 year. Go back to my life having not missed a second. Now imagine that analogy of their body and their life as an A, where I want to take them as a B. But when I get into their body and I look and I'm trapped in their body for 1 year, it's just the deal with God, you know? Am I going to go and freak out that I'm really overweight? Am I going to freak out that maybe my house sucks, my neighborhood sucks, my job sucks? No, not at all. Even if my spouse sucked, no, I'll just clean it all up. And it would take me a while, and I would know it would take me a little while, but the entire time I'm in this other person's body, I don't really think I'm this person because I got to deal with God. In 1 year, I'm back in my body, no matter what, no matter if I crash and burn or not. So the pressure is coming from me, not from any other source. Well, I can guarantee in 1 year, they'll have damn near rock hard abs. Their family won't recognize them. Their friends won't recognize them. If they had broken English that they spoke with, they'd speak clearly. they didn't have knowledge and things that they loved. I try to find out what they love by looking at their stuff, go get them the life they want. It'd be a whole different world. But the entire time I wouldn't worry about it being in A. I just know I'm, this body's in A. And that's how I need you to see your life. We cannot, I think, start from the frequency of that we are absolutely locked and shackled in A. And somehow through lucidity, get ourselves to B. Because every day we wake up, who do we huddle with? A. If we accept A, then we huddle with A, and we just, like, you know, there's a point when you scuba dive, there's a point when you go down, I think it's like something like 40 meters underwater. The ocean above you is so heavy, you can no longer float to the top. The water above you is pushing you down to the bottom of the ocean. And you better have some flippers and some mechanisms to get over that point, because you'll die very fast. Probably got that measurement wrong, but there you go. So the idea is, we can't accept the A algorithm of slavery, of where we are, that we don't want to be, if we want to actually get to be. So what do you do? You wake up, and I need you to envision not just a yearning for B, but I need you to envision actually being in B. And you're going to start, and it's going to be just this, you know, this tiny little feeling, fleeting split second here and there, second, maybe when you get a little bit better in this single 24-hour period. But in a week, I need you to be able to live 3 to 5 seconds of literally convincing your brain that you are from there. And I will assure you that the universe will have no choice but to ebb you towards that reality. I have dated people who were broke as a joke, like everybody else. Ended up marrying very, very wealthy people. A wealthy person, I should say. And they got to live in this lap of luxury, unlike any, you know, like damn near the elite of the world, because they were so freaking rich. And, you know, even after divorce, they still had the frequency of where they were lifted to. Right, someone else lifted them with their hard work, with their toil, to the B from the A. You know, million-dollar vacations. Like, multi-million-dollar vacations for two. Unbelievable, right? But what's fascinating is these individuals that I've met, one in particular, actually believe that they're in the B now, 100%. And in a technical way, they are. But the problem is, they don't know how to really exude the frequency of the B, so they start getting scared. They start worrying about going back to A. And when females get in that situation, it's very common for them to be, you know, looking for sugar daddies. Because how else do you keep the frequency of B alive in your body? If it's just between you and your knowledge of, not, you know, you don't earn any money like that at all. You never have in your entire life. All you do is spend money. You know nothing about investing money at all. You have a big denial complex about trying to get that knowledge. You're just headed right back to A, where you came from. And so you're trying to marry B to keep that frequency alive. And so when I saw this just up close and personal, I thought, damn, that's how I get to B, is to stop acknowledging A at all. I mean, just absolutely deny it. It's as if I have materialized inside this body right now, fully aware of this guy, looks like this, has the same background as me, but perhaps I'm from a couple years in the future, and I'm like, you know, I did sell that product, and it did, you know, get downloaded a billion times, and I sold the company for a couple billion, and I had everything I needed, never have to work again, do whatever I want, and I felt that world for another year or two. I completely understand where I could go right now. And I'm excited just to do it again. Let's just develop the product again, sell it again, have that amazing phone call in the middle of the night that the deal went through. Wake up every morning and see the product that, you know, used more and more and more. Go off to create more products, you know, more films, whatever. And so that's where we all need to be. I want you guys to pull yourself out of your environment. No longer draw the character. I would actually say, if you could just draw this on a piece of paper It'll have a profound effect on your visual mind and your perception of yourself, which is, again, circle on the left, circle on the right. The one on the left, put a big capital A in it. One on the right, put a B in it. Above that, above those two in the center, draw the stick figure that's you. Draw a little skirt if you're a woman, you know? And just realize that A has a frequency that is nearly completely different than B. And if you put your stick figure inside the A, it's going to overwhelm your frequency, and the law of attraction is going to keep you in your slave world. And we don't want that. There's the movie Trading Places, right? Dan Aykroyd, Eddie Murphy, and the Mortimer brothers making a $5 bet that they can swap Eddie Murphy, who's a homeless man, for the Ivy League educated Harvard grad Dan Aykroyd, who's a stock trader. And they, you know, one of them says it's all in the breeding, it's all in the genetics. And the other guy says, well, I think it's in the environment. And sure enough, Eddie Murphy kicks ass and takes names and does the job. And Dan Aykroyd goes into a feral state of being, although he has Jamie Lee Curtis's tits to look at, so it's not so bad. But Eddie Murphy was pulled out of the frequency of homelessness and put in the frequency of privilege. And you know that's how they do it at the top. There's a couple interesting moments in a peasant's life, which is like us, depending on who you are. I really doubt George Soros was watching these videos. But there are moments in your life, in my opinion, where you actually do experience the apex of all freedom and happiness. I'll give you a couple examples. I think when your child is born, if you're there and present for the birth, especially if you're a man, obviously, if you're in the right state of mind for this experience, as soon as the joy of seeing your child's head come out, or they come out healthy and they're just happy, if nothing else, they're not feeling any pain, you have this euphoric, amazing transformation, especially with your first one. That's heavenly, and I think that no matter what your financial status is in life, your happiness outside of that moment is as good as it gets, regardless if you are Prince Charles watching his kids come out, or anyone. The Dalai Lama. But there's a simple one that I think is actually fairly interesting, and it has to do with, if you can find it, getting a massage, a full body massage at some professional place. We're lucky here in California, we've got these, some of the places around here have these older Asian women, and they were raised with the meridian lines of the body, with the chi. And so they're almost like, sometimes they're attached to acupuncture places, but they literally feel your body and they know exactly what's wrong with you. And then they'll start messing with you and they'll start talking to you about like, this hurts, right? And you're like, oh my God, yes, Jesus, no, that was there. And sometimes they're just getting pressure points, but they'll come back 10 minutes later, push the same spot and it doesn't hurt at all. But when you are, you know, especially at a vacation resort or something like that, but no matter where the hell you are, I have found that when someone knows what they're doing, and you're getting sort of a massage, and all that tension's getting out of your body. You know, they rub your scalp and your feet and all this other stuff. They're just draining you of all that negative A frequency. I find that at times it gets euphoric to the point where there would be no difference between me being a billionaire and me being a peasant, because that moment is the peak moment of that experience. You get the apex of that experience of someone nursing you, essentially, right? Some of you have transitioned jobs in your lifetime. And, you know, you, like, again, I'll repeat this because I said it two or three episodes ago, the jobs disease, that's my title for it, which is that you believe that no one will hire you at a different company. You just get so comfortable and so embedded. And I've had this happen to me dozens of times. When you finally go out and interview and people like you immediately, maybe even have two companies that want you, not one, job disease starts to fade. You start to realize you do have value. I guarantee you do. And the last week or two, like, you have to give 2 weeks notice at your current job that you might hate, right? Here's the interesting thing. If you give your 2 weeks notice and you know you're free, you know that you have just dug a hole from A to B, or really from, hopefully from the future, the outside position to B. You don't give a shit anymore about A, right? You don't give a shit about that job that you had that you hate, but you're going to go there for 10 more days, right? Monday through Friday, two batches of those, and then you're gone. And on the 15th day, you go to the new job. And everyone who treats you like crap and who has treated you like crap in the past, well, you don't care anymore. In fact, you start going to this point in your mind without trying, typically, of almost pity. You pity anyone that doesn't have the balls to go look for another job, that they have the job's disease now and you don't. You look at these people that have, and I just experienced this with people that really have no power in life until they walk into an office, and then they just become these power-hungry jerk-offs. They don't do their job, and so all they do is accuse other people of not doing their jobs. The amount of people I've helped get out of their current jobs and go to something else is, I've lost count. When I'm in a position to actually hire from within, it's very easy, very fun. You know, you just interview people, you really get into their skill sets. If they don't have the skills that they need to get the job that they want, then you just work with them and say, you know, you got to go and study this, this, and this. And as soon as you get that knowledge, or at least a working level of knowledge, I'll hire you into the position. You can work your way up. But you have to be able to complete tasks to hold the job. That's all. You don't have to be the expert. That's what mentors are for and bosses are for. But why make this episode other than to help people get to where they want to be? Well, let's just say that what's going on right now in the election in America, if nothing else, is a revolution in thought process. Regardless of who wins and who you like, no one's going to be the same anymore. We finally had a couple candidates that talk about things that we want to hear. And, you know, regardless if they win or not, we start to realize more of this deceitful game of the grasshoppers ruling the ants, right? Go see Bug's Life. The few ruling the many. I think the world is waking up to that. I think that's probably one of the core charters of the truth movement, is to get out of this cycle, to get out of this worship, to not allow someone who's equal to us to behave otherwise. We allow people to rule over us, and that's just complete crap. You know, it's complete crap. We got people that we put badges on that if they have a bad day, they can pull you out of your car, shoot you, get you into the precinct and put you in a room that's not videotaped and beat you to death. And then their buddies will all lie about what they didn't do. The system that regulates that system lies as well, because, boy, you couldn't have any bad blood on your hands. You know, they'll let a murder go by because they don't want to have, you know, the public get upset at them. These are equal human beings to us that we have given the permission to rule over us, and it's just ridiculous. We have, you know, armored drones flying over America. And if some equal person to you decides that you're a threat to their system of manipulation and deceit, they can fire a rocket at you, kill you and your family and your friends. It's a felony if anybody in the neighborhood reports that your house blew up. And they could just put a little cover story on there that some Cessna plane crashed on you. There'll be no evidence of a Cessna plane, whatever. But you're dead because you're the resistance that makes people wake up. But that's position A, right? Position A is that we allow that world to exist in our mind, and therefore it manifests because we aid the frequency of deceit by accepting the fact that it exists. I've said many times on shows way at the beginning that catchphrases are some of the most dangerous things that we allow into our lexicon, into our mind, into the vernacular of mankind. And I'll give you a couple just so you understand. And just, I want you to think about the A circle. I really want you to have a piece of paper in front of you that puts you outside these two circles. So at no point does your mind slip as you listen to this. Perhaps I'll put it up. I'll put the graphic up so you can see it. How many times have you heard all politicians are corrupt? Anytime you say that, what you're doing to yourself and to others around you who can hear you is that it's okay if all politicians are corrupt. Because you just kind of go, life sucks, and then you die. That's what all politicians are corrupt means. That whole thing of life sucks and then you die. Life's a bitch and then you die. That's just someone putting a handcuff on your wrist and putting a handcuff on the wall of the A paradigm and saying, you're stuck here, buddy. It's just like this. Nothing you can do to change yourself. But those who succeed, they can't envision being held down. There's some people running for president of the United States of America that have never been held down like that, even though they have experienced extreme turmoil in their careers, they've always picked themselves up and moved on. And then there's people that have never done anything in their life that actually get to become president or run for president. So let's say that we change the entire world. I'm hoping that there might be a huge change in the United States with the next president. I'm not holding my breath, but I'm hoping that it's for real and that it happens and that things change for the better. And that socialism is not one of those outcomes. And that that infects Europe. That the EU dissolves and all the countries come back as individual countries. Then when I come back from my European trip, I've got Deutschmarks. I've got francs, right? I've got everything. Dinars. I just kind of keep them. I got like $400 or $500 in other people's currencies. I love it. Not a single euro in sight. Pound sterling. It's all there. At that point, and I think this is how we can frequency out of this mess. Whether or not we know how the universe is going to get us there is really irrelevant. My buddy that I told you about at the beginning of the episode, he never knew how fortune was going to be bestowed on him, but my God, it always came to him. He always lands on his feet. And he has to make some sacrifices here and there, but trust me, you know, he's living in kind of some rainy weather. He grew up in Camarillo, California. We both lived in the Bay Area for 10 years plus. He went to Vegas for a little while, ran his own company. He came back to the Bay Area, then he came back to Camarillo, then he went to Washington to work with one of our coworkers from EA who started his own company, who's now worth a lot of money because he got himself to his B from his A because he's a positive guy. But we need to take the whole planet and say, stop thinking about being in the A. Stop being in the A in your brain and be in the B. And then we need to help our people out who are suffering, who believe that sort of the socialism mechanism of, hey, you don't have to work. You just take everyone else's accomplishments and, you know, spend everyone else's money, like the sugar mamas, right? We can't just hope and pray for a revolution of thought in this world. We have to prepare for it. We have to incubate it. And if we want it to be bloodless, which again, you know, you can't easily go out and hurt anyone in a blood filled revolution and have any likelihood of hurting the person that's actually causing your demise. Yet what if the kid out of college who can't get a job because he got a communications degree, he can barely hold down a job at Starbucks, goes out and murders the first guy that he sees driving a Ferrari. Then he says, boy, I just took out one of those guys. And that guy happens to be a founder and a CEO of a company just down the street who employs 75 people. And without that guy's leadership, the company dissolves. And what does he do? He puts 75 people back out on the street. That's sort of the socialist revolution. The 1% that everybody thinks that they understand is, again, I would say less than 5,000 people in this world run this planet. And you know, you can punish them. You could put them in a acidic jar and let them, you know, melt away over 1,000 years. But just disabling them is really all we need to do. And you know, most of you have moved out of your house at some point. Some of you had moments with your parents. I had this with mine. My dad just got a little out of hand when I was 16. He was never home, and I was just raising myself, and I had no problem with it whatsoever. I was like, Dad, you got a new girlfriend. You're spending most of your time at her house. I know you've been alone since the divorce. I totally support you. This is awesome. But he would come home and kind of wreak havoc on the house. That he got into my private stuff and destroyed some of my private possessions, like illustrations and stuff that I had done. I don't think he knew what he was doing, but I don't know if he just got mad or jealous. I have no idea. He was on top of the world. He's married to this woman to this day, right? But I left. I came home. I found my room all cleaned up, let's just say. Went out to the trash to see what he threw away. And when I found some priceless items out there, destroyed. I think I talked about this a long time ago in an episode, but I found my stuff destroyed and I just left that day. And I just disabled him. And I went and lived with a buddy of mine outside of town for about a month and a half until his parents kicked us out. And I went and lived with my grandparents until I finished up school. And for me, I graduated at 17, so I was just about a year. And I had a great time. You know, it's just across town. The whole town's like a township. So it's like, you know, maybe 2 miles away from where I was. But it was good. I was safe. Went to school. No problem. My grandparents had 5 bedrooms in their house. It wasn't like a big deal. Just stayed in the basement and had a good time. In the end, I was glad I got to meet my grandparents even more than I did. But that's what we need to do. Change the frequency of our lives. Change where we see ourselves waking up every morning and where we exist every second to every minute, you know? So, law of attraction is huge. Law of attraction feeds into absolutely everything that you do. If you have negative people around you, you know, you can attempt to get them to be non-negative. Maybe it works, maybe it doesn't work. But if nothing else, you're going to have to pick better friends. I don't think I have very many teenage listeners, but if I do have a single teenage listener, let me tell you this much. When your parents try to influence your friendship picking, or when your parents look at a kid and they go, I really like that kid, they're trying to tell you that you've made a really good choice, and they see the bigger picture of the person you're hanging out with. If you're a girl and you're bringing home a boyfriend and your parents just cringe, don't try to be a badass. Don't try to be a badass, because what you're going to end up doing is oscillating to the frequency of that person, and you might do yourself incredible danger. Remember, it's the teeny tiny decisions in life that change your life forever, and picking a bad circle of friends could be really bad. Now, it could be, too, that someone looks formidable, and you might get some judgment on them, so you need to prepare to educate people about someone. I've got a really good friend of mine, and he's probably listening, and you know, he got a lot of tattoos when he was young. He's definitely a badass motherfucker, let me just tell you that much. But in some circles, I might bring him into an uneducated circle where people really judge him books by covers, and he's well aware of this, and he's completely acclimated to this, and he's got good friends around him 24/7. I've known this guy for 10 years plus, probably 13 years. He's one of the most intelligent human beings I've ever met in my life, and I say that with absolute qualification. He's also one of the sweetest people I've ever met in my life. Nicest guys. One of the dudes I would die for, and he would die for me, without a doubt. And I mean that absolute. And he's a blast to hang out with. And it's almost, for me, it's a blast to hang out with him, because he's a good conditioning agent for the rest of the world. That he comes in with tattoos from the, you know, bottom of his neck to the top of his hands to his palms. It pretty much stops at his waistline. But for him, you know, for me, when I bring around my buddies, everyone's, you know, I don't know what anyone really thinks, but they, you know, I'm sure that they're a little cautious at first. But then he starts talking, and he's massively intelligent. I mean, he could make his own show like this for hours and hours and hours, right? I might have him on the show at some point. But that's what we need around us, is really, really good people. And you'll find that you just start amassing. And the reason why I met him is because I met another guy. Big Italian buddy of mine who owned a restaurant. I've talked about it a couple times, right? I met him. Then I met his other buddy who's a police officer. And we've got, you know, 3 of us hanging out together, 4 of us hanging out together, and none of us look alike. It's hilarious. But we are utterly best friends, like blood brothers, man. And we exude the frequency that we want, especially when we get together. We crawl out of our A's and try to get into our B's. But I can tell you now, looking back, and this whole realization for me of not living in the A and trying to be super intelligent to get to the B is about, 2 months old for me. Yeah, I've always known about the law of attraction and stuff. But again, I think every strategy I've ever had given to me, and I probably misunderstood Tony Robbins' strategy, because I think he was probably more along the lines of what I'm saying in this video, but to just utterly deny your existence in the A, if that's not what you want. At this gig I just finished, I have the person who got me the job talking to me about wanting to improve her life. And it was probably sitting there talking to her that made me realize every sentence that came out of her mouth was a slave sentence. It was a, I'm in this world and I got to get out. And that's the worst way to form the sentence. You must say, did I tell you where I'm going? I'm going from me to this world right here, which is the one I really want, the B. I know I'm beating this up from a lot of different angles, but I think that it's important. But let me leave you with a little bit of this. You might ask yourself, how do I know I'm thinking a B thought versus an A thought? Because you've got a pretty good idea. Let's just say you buy into this. You're saying, I totally dig what you're saying, but how do I make sure I'm having a B thought, not an A thought? Here's how you do it. The sentence will go, this is where I'm from. This is where I am. And I'm very glad I'm here. A total confirmation sentence structure that essentially puts you exactly where you are. You don't worry about saying statements that are negative to say, I'm going to get there. I'm going to be there. Because that sort of tells your frequency that you're not there. And we need to understand that you need to be at the next destination, that you're already there. Don't worry about being negative about where you are right now. If you're in the A, and you know you're in the A, don't acknowledge it at all. Even if you know you have little fleeting, you know, because you do have to get up to go to work. You're in the A. You're stuck in the A for a little while. Just sort of do it as an autonomic thing. I'll give you an example. When you drive your car, you do not say, I need to push the brake. I need to push the accelerator. I need to push the brake. I need to push the accelerator. I need to put it in drive. I need to put it in reverse. I need to look in my mirror. I need to look in my side mirror, my rear view mirror. You don't talk about that at all. You know, I need to put my seatbelt on. I need to take my seatbelt off. You don't think about any of that crap. But those are conscious decisions that you must make to operate a vehicle. And that's where we want the thoughts about A, completely buried in your autonomic system. But your conscious thoughts have to be that you already are in the B. And if anything, use the analogy, play the mind trick about inhabiting someone else's body. And just imagine it this way, because you don't want to disembody your identity, right? I'm telling you, this is my experiment with myself, so, you know, I might change my opinion or add something to this later, but it goes something like this. You know, envision yourself a couple of years in the future. You don't have to give it a 10-year thing. You're like, well, geez, you know, I got a wife and two kids. I make this much money. I'm going to school and I'm going to work at the same time. I'm working on these creative projects. You know, you are. And you're thinking, well, it's going to take me 5-10 years to be half a billionaire, billionaire, whatever. I don't, whatever you like, right? Whatever's your thing. Don't demonize money. It's not a big deal. But you might think to yourself, well, I've got to think about it being 5 years out. All I got to say is screw that. Let the universe decide how many years out it is. Right now, just think about, well, it's probably at least 2 years out, maybe. And I am getting the privilege to come back to this pre-success body of mine. There's a Twilight Zone all about this. But you get to come back to your body and live the success arc again. Because it was a lot of fun to get all those successes. You know, we've got a listener who's, Jared, man, you're blowing me away, dude. Like, he's creating this Tesla thing, this Tesla animation, this like claymation thing. And he's busted his ass to get all these different models together and stuff. And it's just the most invigorating, inspiring thing to watch from the United States of America. He's in Glasgow, I believe. And who knows, you know, who knows what that thing will end up being and where it will take him. But I think he's doing absolutely everything he needs to do to just utterly change his life. And I'll tell you a story that goes right along with this, which is my buddy Robert Llewellyn, who plays Crichton in Red Dwarf, for those of you who know what that is. It's K-R-Y, I think T-E-N, Crichton, maybe it's T-O-N, I can't remember. How did he get the job being Crichton in Red Dwarf, which is now, I think, going to be finishing its 13th season here. They're filming two new seasons all at once. He struggled as a sort of a playwright and an actor. And he wrote a play in the late 80s about being a robot. And he played this robot. I've never seen it. I don't think it was ever videotaped. But the producers of Red Dwarf in the second season introduced a robot. And they used this really classical actor from England. The actor essentially got to the point where he goes, this is a really goofy show. And Red Dwarf had not taken off yet. It was sort of a if you haven't seen it, it's a brilliant comedy. It's very young in its sensibilities, but I tell you what, you know, you'll cringe at maybe half the jokes, but man, you'll laugh hard at least a fourth the jokes, and they're worth a laugh, right? They're just little 30-minute episodes. The premise of the story is that a big spaceship got lost in space. A janitor was in a stasis pod, and everyone else died of a flu that killed everybody on the spaceship, and the only inhabitants that survived was this janitor who was in stasis, the cat on board who's been on this ship for 3 billion years or something like that, turned into this guy, John Jules is his name. They resurrected a hologram who has an H on his forehead, which is where you get your hologram from Voyager. They totally took this from him. And you have to wear the H in this world because it proves that you're not a human being, and which I think his name is Rimmer. And then you have Crichton, who's a robot that gets resurrected. So this actor leaves, but he's wearing a huge costume. And so to replace him with a new actor wasn't completely stunning to the audience, right? But Robert Llewellyn gets this job because the producer went and saw the play of him being a robot. And they came to him and said, you know, do you think you could play a robot? And he says, well, of course. And he goes, well, they say, well, could you, we need you to come up with a funny walk and a funny accent. And so he did kind of a Munster, the Frankenstein character in the show Munsters, and here in the United States. And then he sort of did an American Canadian accent. And so he became ultra famous. He's sort of the Spock, you know, character to this franchise, where he became one of the most sought after characters to walk on stage. But I guess I would say that all of them are equally revered. So our listener's working on stuff that, who knows, man, he's pumping out these YouTube videos. He's got his kids involved. He's doing every single thing, and he's doing it masterfully. He's not just talking about it. And, you know, even for me, I think he's in his early 30s, late 20s, and I'm in my mid-40s. I'm inspired every day when I see this, the progress and just the tenaciousness of saying, look, he needed a little doll to play Tesla. He needed a little tuxedo outfit, so he busted his ass and paid quite a bit of money for this little guy, and he wanted little chairs, and he's trying to build a little set to do this animation. I'm working on a Tesla project right now here in LA, so for me, it's like, it's really amazing to watch. Everybody's kind of waking up to Tesla's amazingness, right? But this dude is just owning his B world. He's making his B world happen right in front of his face. And that law of attraction is going to bring him a B result. And maybe you get your B, and again, you didn't think it through enough, and it's not enough for you. So fine, create a C. Go for the C. Just keep leapfrogging until you end up being where you want to be. My neighbors are singing over there, little girls. It's absolutely hilarious. So I think you feel me. I beat this up from several angles. The more that we're all happy, the better the world will be. And what I'm talking about in this episode is you getting your ultimate destiny. And, you know, honestly, I don't care if you were diagnosed with cancer today. Just start seeing the world without cancer. Just start seeing your near future as the future that you were able to beat it. You know, and please go see the episode on cancer. I did run into another story about someone recovering from cancer, which was Ronald Reagan. And there was an alternate theory there I just want to throw out because I'm not going to recreate the cancer episode, but I want everyone to hear it. The story goes is that Ronald Reagan ended up having cancer in the mid-80s while being president, I think. And they said, you know, we're going to give you chemo. We're going to cure you, da-da-da. And he said, screw that. You know, I know this stuff's absolutely horrible for me. Hell, maybe this was in the 90s after he was president, I don't know. But there's a treatment, I guess, in Germany that is a thermal treatment. And what it is you go to a hospital that does this particular treatment, and you want to be in a hospital to do this. Although they explain techniques, you can do this by yourself. You heat the human body up between 105 and 107 degrees. Just, you know, if you had brain tumor, you know, I guess you'd have to be very, very careful not to, you know, you're going to run the risk of killing yourself, which is why you would need to be in a hospital to do this. But they said that most of the, you know, the body cancers, right? And I think this works without incubating the head, but they said that the treatment was merely this. You go to a clinic that covers you from your neck down to your toes. They heat you up for 15 minutes, just 15 minutes once a week. And it supposedly just destroys the crap out of cancer because it can't handle that level of fever in your body. And supposedly, Ronald Reagan did not die of cancer, right? He died of sort of an Alzheimer's thing, which I would just chalk up to being poisoned to death. But they said that, you know, and again, I'm not recommending you do this second technique, but they said, in fact, not at all without consulting somebody. But they said that if you're in like some third world country and you can't get these treatments, they said that if you get inside of a car in the sun and you keep a temperature gauge around you, lots of water, super hydration, have someone with you just in case you pass out, right? But they said if you sit in a car for 15 to 20 minutes. It's going to take a while to heat up in the summer. Again, once a week, 15 minutes at this really high temperature that you can. Maybe it's like turning the heater on. Hell, I don't know. I don't think you can quite get to those temperatures in a car, but I never tried. They said you can do it to yourself that way if you were just absolutely in the post-apocalyptic world. There is no treatment centers, and you think you've got a cancer or something. Again, but there's a lot of, I think, much better techniques, B17C with the C-catalyst, the Gershom technique, perhaps hemp oil. You know, if you can get weed, you can make your own hemp. Just make it for yourself. They're trying to outlaw this incredibly because it does cure cancer, I guess, very quickly. There's the guy that does the urine treatment, takes your urine, and he synthesizes it up. So there's a lot of techniques. I don't want anyone to lose their life like that. But maybe you combine that with this law of attraction and you get what you need. Anyway, you feel me? If you haven't already, go to mkultraradio.com. The Facebook page for this, I would love to have you guys go over. I'm trying to post more like some really nice scientific discoveries, just sort of the ebbing, you know, cutting edge of science. But the Facebook page for this is facebook.com/deepthoughtsradio. If you're into politics and the election, go to facebook.com/mkultraradio. And please join, contribute. We've got a lot of folks that, you know, sometimes we're just evaluating information. And so we post an article and just be a few people call BS on it. We're right there with you. It's important that we know where the disinformation is and where the real information is so we can form a better argument when we're out trying to campaign a certain frequency of thought. I got a little more time on my hands because I finished a project. I'm probably going to start a new gig here in the next week and a half or so. So I'm going to try to pound some of these out fairly quickly. I know you guys have been on hold. You know, I do apologize for the quality of some of the last few shows. They have been fairly digressed here and there. You know, I want to mention too, if you see advertisements running on these videos, it's not because I'm turning on advertisement to make money for myself. I've never turned on advertising once for any of these videos. What happens is I use a song to start this show out with, and I use the same song to end it with, and the owners of those songs have the right to turn on advertising, and so that's why you see an ad here and there if you're watching it from YouTube. If you ever have any problem watching the YouTube video, what's also happened is that the show goes out on the podcast regardless of this licensing crap, so you can get over there and get it there quickly. So my show on Everything, the company, you know, has this automatic thing of where they're willing to let the song be listened to from, and they block Germany every single time, which I've mentioned in the past, but I just realized they block certain devices. And so if you're having problems listening to it and you're not in Germany, definitely let us know if you're coming in through, you know, an Apple TV versus your cell phone versus a cable box, whatever, through your computer. The everything video is getting tons of views, so the majority of people are actually able to see it. I hate remixing it to fight that music licensing crap because I just think that sometimes it's perfect. The time management one is actually being published right now. It's probably encoding as I speak. This one will go out next as 86. And so, yeah, I'll try to get the sacred geometry one out as well. You know, the stuff about flat earth, you know, it's so vibrant right now in terms of new evidence here and there. I'm really trying not to hop on just yet. I've kind of decided. I did two attempts, and the second I get done with the video, I go watch a few more things at my smoke shop where they kind of get into this, and I realize that I don't want to just regurgitate crap you've already heard. I want to come at it from a different angle of lucidity to see if we can't figure out what the hell's going on with this whole thing and why, you know, NASA can't seem to produce a single shot of the Earth from space that isn't a fake. But anyway, as I always say, take care of yourself and someone else, and I will see you in the next Deep Thoughts. Over now. Oh, give me a home where the microphone's blown by real MCs, and I'll leave the pumps alone. But now we stick them, kick them to the curb if we have to. Life here.